Welcome to Greatness, where the world's leading thinkers share their ideas about how to create greatness, great leaders, great teams, and great organizations. Why be good when you can be great? This is Gretchen Gagel, and I am so excited today to welcome Megan Raitz to the Greatness Podcast. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you for having me, Gretchen.
Yeah, so our relationship started when I read a recent article of yours in Harvard Business Review entitled Why Your Team Should Practice Collective Mindfulness. And I became really curious about your work, looking back to your work around speaking up and conversations and so many things to talk about today. But I always love starting with a little bit personal about you. And Megan, I know you're sitting north of London right now. And other than that, I don't know a lot about you. How did you become interested? Like, how did your life journey lead you to wanting to study things like conversations and speaking up?
Well, I started my working life in consulting, in management consulting, in strategy, and spent a good few years developing rather idealistic strategies for organizations, and then realizing that they didn't tend to be implemented.
Because what
a strategy looks like on paper is all very well and good, but then it meets people, doesn't it? And people have a different idea about how things should be. And so actually I then got very interested in psychology, in people, in conversations, and how people make sense of things, particularly in organizational context. So I had a fun time in the 90s in the internet boom, learned a bit more about the craziness of organizational life. And then eventually, after a stint at another management consultancy focusing on change and people, I joined a business school called Ashridge Hult. And it's there really over the last lot of years that I have focused in particularly on organizational dialogue. And I use the word dialogue in its broadest sense. How do we meet, encounter, listen, understand, care for one another inside organizational systems? And organizational systems don't make it easy for us to do that very well. So that's why I just became absolutely fascinated. And that's where my work's been over the last few years.
Yeah, that's so interesting because, you know, I started out in engineering and then did an MBA in finance down the road. And as I progressed through my consulting career, I've joked with people that the psychology degree would have been so much more helpful in arming me, that it is really about the people, et cetera. So you and I have taken a similar path in that way. So right. I watched one of your videos today, and it really was talking about this whole idea around speaking up. And I found that fascinating. Tell us about your work in that area.
Let me start with something that I call conversational habits. You, Gretchen, and I, and everybody listening to this, have tons of habits, don't we? And probably best not talk about most of them. But the ones that I'm interested in are the habits that we have around what we speak up about and what we stay silent around. Mm. And also our habits about who we tend to listen to and we kind of step into attention for, and whose voice we tend to discount. And I'm interested in that because it's got so many consequences. It has so many consequences for us as individuals. Our conversational habits determine our careers and our relationships. They determine whether we feel proud of ourselves at the end of each day. But they are hugely important in organizations as well. So you see newspaper articles where organizations are on the front page for all the wrong reasons. They've been brought to their knees because something hasn't been spoken about that should have been. But similarly, then you get organizations who have habits where it's far more feasible to speak up and offer ideas. And they're amongst the most innovative and agile organizations in the world. So my work on speaking truth to power is all around these habits that we have and the consequences that they have on us, as I said, on individuals, in teams, and also in organizations. And essentially, and this is the kind of link with mindfulness, I'm fascinated in, okay, how do we disrupt those habits so that we can perform better, make more ethical decisions, and care and be compassionate for one another inside organizations?
That's so fascinating. So one of the things that I probably didn't share with you, I actually teach ethics at the University of Denver remotely in their MBA program. And we spend a lot of time talking about how do organizations get to that point with that big giant blow up scandal that just seems like, wow. I mean, many, many moons ago in the late 80s, the company I worked for bought Beechnut Baby Foods, which was convicted of a felony for adulterating apple juice, putting sugar in baby apple juice and marketing it as 100% pure, which just seems farcical that somebody thought they could get away with that. So how do these habits, how do these conversational habits and lack of speaking up lead to these ethical challenges within these complex systems that you talk about?
In a word, power. And how we construct power differences and relative status and authority in our systems. And I talk a lot about how we label one another and put titles on one another. So, for example, we obviously have hierarchy and job title. We have age, we have gender, we have ethnicity, we have specialism, location, language. We have all these ways of labeling one another, and each of these labels convey relative status and authority. And that status and authority in turn hugely affects whose voice gets heard and whose voice doesn't, who gets listened to. And the kind of issues that you're talking about is when usually, very often, I mean, it's far more complex than this actually, but power and our understanding of power and then how we construct and understand and expect certain people to know and speak up and certain people that we should follow, those constructions create all sorts of issues within our systems. And so if we need to examine how we start to make more ethical decisions, for example, it's very difficult to do that unless we start to kind of deconstruct how we understand power and status, because it's so foundational.
I feel like we could just do another entire podcast on power. It's something that's not a huge area of expertise for me, but I understand so deeply power and obedience. I use the brown eyes, blue eyes study from years ago as an example for students of how quickly we can label, as you said, you have brown eyes, so you're not as smart as someone who has blue eyes, the Jane Elliott experiments, which I just find fascinating.
And worrying.
Yes, and worrying. Yes, we don't do experiments like that anymore. And you know, your discussion in the video about labels really kind of also took me to Edgar Schein and his conversations about occupational culture, which I had never really thought about before. But being an engineer, when you say engineer, you say architect, you say HR, you say marketing, you say a generation. There are all kinds of labels that pop into our heads that shape our bias and our frameworks in thinking about those people.
Yes, exactly. So I often use the example of HR because I work with many HR teams, and I can go into one organization and HR, if you're from HR, you have a seat at the table. You know, people is at the center. People are at the center of the organizational strategy. And when you speak, people listen. And then the very next day I go into another organization and HR is perceived completely differently. HR is perceived as more administrative, you know, pay, redundancy, process. So the same label can convey very different expectations in different places. And one way to think of organizational culture when you're talking about Edgar Schein One way you could think about culture are the stuck patterns in our conversation. So the stuck patterns around what gets said, what doesn't, who gets heard, and who doesn't.
Does that lead into the traps that you talked about? Because I found your discussion around the traps that we get caught in to be fascinating.
Yeah, so I've looked at both the speaking up traps, so traps we fall into that mean that we either don't speak up in the first place, or if we do, it's not very effective. And I've also examined what I call the listen up traps. And I should state sort of before this, probably it's important to say that when I started studying speaking truth to power, I noticed one major trap that organizations fall into. And that's they, you know, I often get invited to talk inside organizations, and it's usually a leadership team that knocks on my door and says, "Megan, we've got a bit of a problem because they, in inverted commas, they aren't speaking up enough. Can you just make them be more brave and courageous? We need their ideas and they need to speak up." And I, you know, very early on, I went into a couple of organizations and I went to speak to they. And in a couple of those occasions, they said, "Yes, but when we speak up, you disappear." You know, the right. Last time somebody spoke up, they disappeared. So I started to realize, of course, this is, you know, we put so much focus on helping people to speak up and getting them to be brave, whereas we actually need to put at least, if not more, effort into listening up and creating, as Amy Edmondson would say, the psychological safety, whereby you don't need to be so brave in the first place. So this is one, you know, there's one huge trap that I would say is many organizations are really wasting their time and their money on just trying to get people to be brave. And when those poor people pluck up enough courage to speak up, they're treated in a way that mean that they're silenced from there on. So we really need to focus in on the listening up. And some of the traps that I explore on that side are to do with the fact that as we become more senior, we get into a kind of bubble where we think people are speaking up, but they're not. We think we're approachable and that we're lovely. And even if we are, of course, we've got these titles and labels that make us intimidating to others. And we forget that. So we don't do the level of work that we need to make it safe for other people to speak.
That's so fascinating. You know, Conversant, the organization that I work with now, our whole focus is on conversations, and it has been for 30 years. We started out with hostage negotiators 30 years ago, really trying to understand how to make deep and meaningful conversations and relationships happen. And we have a conversation meter where we shift from like low value conversations to high value. And listening is the shift that makes it from the low value to the high value. I feel like I hear so much about listening and have for the last 35 years of my career, but it just doesn't seem like a nut that we've cracked on how to get people to listen with curiosity, to be active listeners.
But there's so much to listening. And it's not simply a skill to turn on. It's kind of a philosophy. You know, you are you open to having your opinion changed? Are you curious about others and their thoughts? Do you trust the value of other people's opinions? So this is, you know, this is not just a skill around attentive listening and how do you listen well. As I said, it's more a lifestyle, more an orientation, a philosophy. And I think that probably explains why we find listening quite as difficult as we do. You know, again, linking back to mindfulness, listening has a lot to do with our care for others, our respect for others, our trust, and our attention. And those things are very often compromised, aren't they, in inside organizations?
Yeah, I feel like I really need for you and Mickey Connolly, our chairman and founder, to sit down and have a conversation. I'm sure it would be quite fascinating. There's something you talked about, the signals that we send as leaders. So you talk both about the people that are trying to speak up and some of the traps they fall into. But I loved what you said about some of the things that we forget as leaders about why people don't speak up to us, some of the nonverbal signals we send, et cetera. Could you talk to us about that? Because I think any leader out there listening will find these remarkably helpful.
Certainly. So here's an example. A few months ago, in the age of having face-to-face workshops, I was running a workshop with about 20 people, and right in the middle of the room, there was a guy sitting there. And as I started to talk, pretty much, you know, the first sentence, his arms were crossed, he sort of slumped down in his chair, and he had a huge frown on his face. And at various points over the course of the 2-hour workshop, he was rolling his eyes and he was right in front of me. And I was trying not to let all of my attention go in that direction, but I was definitely thinking to myself, oh dear, he really doesn't like what I'm saying. He really doesn't want to be here. And at the end of the workshop, he came up to me and I was just thinking, uh-oh, here we go. And he said to me, "Megan, that was really interesting. Where can I find out more?" And as I kind of picked myself off the floor, I said, "Really?" And I gave him a little bit of feedback. And we had quite a laugh because it turns out that his exceptionally frowny face is what we call his thinking face, his resting face. And all very well and good if you know him well. You know, right. You probably know that it's his thinking face, but for everybody else, it's really intimidating. And so, you know, that's one example of how we give out signals on autopilot. Yeah. We don't even notice what our body and our face is doing. And, you know, another very common signal is we're on our phones so much. You know, do you put your phone down when somebody comes into the office? Worse, do you pick up your phone when somebody comes into the office? These are all signals that, of course, we really are on autopilot with. And the connection here with our mindfulness is, well, as Nancy Klein, who's a colleague of mine, says, know your face. Mm-hmm. Have we got this kind of capacity for what we might call meta-awareness so that we know what signals we are sending in the moment? Because if you're in a position of power, you're in the spotlight. People are looking at the signals that you send far more than you realize. And it could make the difference in the moment between somebody giving you their idea or telling you their problem or being silenced.
Yeah. I loved your point you made too about we forget how scary it is to approach people in a certain position. And it made me think of a gentleman who is my mentor today that I started working with in 1994. And oh my gosh, he could make me quake in my boots. He was a very demanding person to work with and but always in a kind and gentle way. I mean, I never heard him raise his voice or anything, but you know, now we're very, very close friends and he's not intimidating to me, but we also forget how intimidating we can be accidentally, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So one of the last Harvard Business Review articles I've done on the speaking up research is called "Managers, You're More Intimidating Than You Think."
Ah, there you go.
Yeah. So yes, again, it comes back to some of these titles and labels that others put on us. And we don't really realize the power of those labels. And actually, I've written with my co-researcher, John Higgins, and also a colleague, Ben Fuchs, on something that we call advantage blindness. So when we have titles and labels that convey status and authority, we very often don't realize the impact that they have. It's not until we don't have the labels that convey status and authority that we realize how important they are. And so very often we can find ourselves in senior positions. And very often when we're senior, certainly in, like in the UK, if you're in senior positions, it's not usually just the hierarchical title. You'll very often have other labels that tend to convey status and authority as well. So, for example, white male. And it's very hard when you have these titles to realize what it would ever be like if you didn't have them. And so we tend to need to do far more work than we realize in order to help other people to speak up because of that advantage blindness.
It's so fascinating. So I'm sitting out there. I'm the CEO of an organization or a senior leader or anybody leading a team, right? What do I do about this? How do we take all this fabulous research that you and others have been doing and put it into practice? Like what are, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about situations in the past where I know I had my frowny face on and was discouraging, inadvertently discouraging people from speaking up about things. So what can I do in the future?
Great question. The very first thing I would say is to assume that you need to do far more work than you realize and assume with the best possible, in the best possible way, you are possibly deluded around whether people are speaking up or not. So the more senior you are, the more optimistic that you get around whether other people are speaking up. So the very first thing is to say, actually, just assume you're probably not right about that. And then we'll go from there. And in the book, what we do is we use a framework which we call the truth framework, which really breaks down the choices that we make, both about speaking up, but also about listening up. So we try and get under the skin around these habits and why these habits stay in place. So very, very briefly, on the listening up side, the truth framework helps us look at whether we trust other people's opinions or not, whether we understand the risk that other people feel that they face when they speak up to us, whether we understand power and politics and how it works in our organizations. The second T in the truth framework stands for titles and labels. So we get senior leaders to understand, well, how are titles and labels constructed in their organization and what's the impact of that? And the final one, H, is how to. And the how to is really around, well, things like, well, what, where, when, why, who do I need to focus on in order to help people to speak up well? And there's quite a lot to do with the strategy that we employ around helping people to speak up. You know, it's no good really as a senior leader expecting in your town hall meeting with 200 people after you've just shown them the strategy. If you stand on stage and then go, right, anybody got any feedback?
Right.
You're really not likely to get anything, whereas you get different sorts of conversations in different places and different venues. And we're really helping senior leaders to try and understand that and choose a little bit more wisely so that they hear what they need to hear.
And you're speaking of your book, Speak Up, Say What Needs to Be Said and Hear What Needs to Be Heard.
That's right. Yes. So that was published, was it last year? I'm losing track. Yes. that goes into the research in a lot of depth and detail.
I'm sure so many different tips. And the fact that I love that you approach it from the, okay, I'm the big scary, sending these frowny faces, trying, you know, leader saying, hey, everybody speak up. It's all going to be fine. Giving tips to those people. But it's interesting. I did a session today with the Women's Leadership Group. We brought in another author around confidence. And you talk about some of the traps on the, you know, kind of that doubt and other things that those of us that are trying to speak up get caught up in. Can you share a little bit about that too?
Yeah. So the speak up traps, I talk about three in particular. And the first one is around imposter experience. You know, the little voice in your head that says, psst, when are they going to find out? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
That's the imposter voice. And Over the last few years, I've interviewed a lot of people, and I have to say I have met a few senior leaders that could do with more imposter voice. They could do with having some more doubt about right. their own opinion. But most of us, of course, need to dial it down a bit. And this is, again, a link with mindfulness. So do we notice when that thought pops up in our head that is the imposter voice, are we able to spot it as the imposter voice and then engage with it a little and kind of say, okay, well, am I going to listen to you on this occasion or am I going to experiment? Am I going to push myself a little bit more? So the imposter experience is one thing that stops us speaking up. Another thing that stops us speaking up is abdication. So we assume that somebody else is going to speak up. It's not my job. Mm. Again, mindfulness allows us to notice that assumption and give us the ability to be a bit critical about that assumption. Because unfortunately, with abdication, a lot of people are probably thinking the same thing. And some people think it's our job. So we really need to notice that. And the final trap I speak of in speaking up is to do with how we put ourselves in the other person's shoes. So we speak in a way that the other person can hear us, using the language that they're used to, using aspects of their own, what they care of, their own particular agenda, in order to place what we need to say to them so that they're more likely to listen, and using a time and a place where the other person can hear us. Very often when we speak up, we're very self-absorbed. And we need that ability to really think about the other person and when and where and how to speak to them in a way that will really land.
That's, I mean, so much great advice here. As I've progressed over the last 35 years, and this was a big driver behind me joining the Conversant team, our ability, and I'm going to go back to a comment you made very early on about organizational systems and their complexity, and that our ability to build relationships is really foundational to this conversational ability, understanding how we send signals, how we understand how we receive. That's what one thing I love about your work is kind of talking from both of those points. Our founder, Mickey Connolly, says that conversations are the connective tissue of humanity. You know, I wish 30 years ago, I'd learned a lot more about how to have conversations, how to encourage people to speak up, how to, you know, listen with curiosity, et cetera. So I think that's why it really resonated with me when I read your work. So we're coming to the end of our time. I always feel like these could go on for hours and hours because Megan, I find you really fascinating. What final advice do you have for our listeners out there that really want to roll their sleeves up, understand how to cultivate a culture where people not just have the ability to speak up, but they're really encouraged, we're having these healthy speak up kind of conversations?
I think I would encourage people to inquire and see how fascinating some of these habits are, both their own habits and the habits of the people around them. So start spotting these habits, start engaging with them, start experimenting, start disrupting some of these automatic pilot things that we do. And taking that inquiring and that learning process on enables us to really flourish in our teams and our organizations. And I guess that's at heart what I'm certainly searching for and what I would really love more people to be able to do. So we flourish through our relationships, through what we're able to say, through how we hear and learn from others. So it's very, really, really worth paying attention to.
I couldn't agree more. Thank goodness for neuroplasticity, right? Our ability to rewire our brains into new habits. And I feel like I've got decades left of learning to do habits to break, but I shouldn't say that. New habits to form. I'll think about it that way. Megan, thank you so much. The wonders of technology connecting us from the UK to Australia. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Your book, Speak Up, Definitely sounds like something that has incredible tips for our listeners.
Thank you for inviting me, Gretchen. I'm really
interested. Interested in hearing more? Visit us at greatnessconsulting.com. Thank you.